Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another show of Pre-Match Mooty. Guys, today we have a special guest. It's actually our first official guest. We've got Chris Ochi. His surname is a Polish surname. It's Oshwat. I don't know. You can pronounce it properly for us just now.
Yeah.
All the way from the UK. I haven't seen you in a while. We've also got Musa. The other lads are here. They're just waiting in the back because the first 15 minutes we're going to dedicate to Chris, and he's going to give us some insights as to pretty much football under the current conditions of COVID, as well as anything else guys want to ask. So please throw your questions in there and we can take it from there. But first, an introduction, Chris. Tell everyone what your story is, man.
Yeah, so yeah, good attempt at the name. It's Okvat, but Oki's good, mate. Oki's all good.
Okvat?
Crazy, mate. Crazy Polish heritage, but no, yeah, it's good to hear some accents again. God, I've missed South Africa. So I've been, let's probably start from the beginning. I've probably been coaching for about 14 years now. Starting in the grassroots game to pretty much just doing your Sunday league with your under 8s and 9s and working my way up and through. Worked in a lot of primary schools, doing a lot of coaching on the side, and then working my way through my qualifications, starting at FA Level 1, and then currently at me UEFA B, wanting to do my A licence sometime next year when we get some form of normality back over here. So we started off by coaching at the local grassroots club. And then I put myself into a window of just doing some freelancing in terms of just going in, doing some working at Liverpool Academy. But that was all unpaid at the time. So I did that for about a year, just going in, working with multiple different age groups, trying to learn and absorb as much as I could. And then eventually getting myself into development centres. So a lot of the academies have different centres set up in and around where they're based, and obviously looking for talent to try and bring in at younger ages. And then working in with the under 8s and 9s, progressing from that. And then I got the opportunity to start doing things with the international side, which was Liverpool's international academies, setting them up, been across to India. I mean, countries-wise, probably about 15, 16 visited. You've been a few with me, Cloudy, so you'll know about that.
Nice.
And then eventually coming back, so I've kind of like grazed over that, but that was over the span of 6-7 years. Every time I used to come back with the international academies, they still allow me to be involved with going in and doing, like I said, your development centres or working with the 8s and 9s, different age groups at Liverpool. And then eventually coming back after my time in India, after my last international academy, I came back and started working at Wigan Athletic. And I'll go into I'm sure you'll ask the questions, but I'll go into the different levels of categories and try and give you some insight on those academies and where they kind of sit. Started with the 9s and 10s at Wigan, worked my way up and through into the 14s, and then was working 14s, 15s, 16s, which is like the youth development age, which pretty much goes from 12 up to 16, and just being around that until COVID struck, really. So last March, probably just took a little back step from it all. I'm currently just having a break, and I've just had a newborn baby boy, Max. So he's...
Congratulations.
But that pretty much brings me up today. I still do some private coaching. There's a big part at the moment for individuals, both online and obviously with COVID, it's crazy. I mean, it just feels good to speak to some lads and have a beer. I mean, I've not done that in some time either. So it's in terms of coaching, I'm just trying to keep my hand in, but it's just crazy at the time. Because once you get set up, you get all your clients back in or your players back in, and then obviously, guidelines change. You've got to start again. So it's crazy at the moment, as I'm sure it is for you guys.
Yeah, man. Wonga's actually asking one of the questions, Chris. He's saying the FA have rules on academies, and he says, do they have rules that guide you on how to run the academies and the standards that you must follow? And in terms of how have they done this during lockdown?
Yeah, well, as always, in terms of governments and stuff, it's always a confusing time and a bit of a mess. But in terms of the way our academy is set up, you have different categories. So pretty much you have a category system set from 1 to 4. And what you do is the FA and the Premier League actually send audits out to individual academies. And they grade you on numerous things, up to 10 different categories, but pretty much up to like sort of your facility, your productivity of what you're producing in terms of players, qualifications of your coaches. So if you start at Cat 4, that's usually for under-17s teams who don't really have an underbelly of a category. For instance, if you don't have U9s and you start at under-17s, Brentford did something similar a few years ago. They scrapped the whole academy and just went to under-18s, 17 to try and obviously minimise the amount of money and funding that was going in. But Category 4 starts at under-17s. Category 3, again, that would be what Wigan Athletic was. They were competing to be a Category 2, but that'll just be a training ground facility looking to work off a body of work, which is it's called ECPP, which is the Elite Player Performance Plan. And what you do is, you're all part of it, you have to log game time, log your sessions. All philosophies are different within the club, but you just have to produce the facts of what you're delivering week in, week out. So, for instance, at Wigan, we were doing Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday nights, playing on a Sunday. So you're pretty much full-time at that 14 to 16 bracket. Younger age groups are probably training 3 times a week, not 4. And also within that, when you're moving up through to Category 2 and Category 1, you have to offer education as well to your players. So what we do at this system is once you get to 12 and 13 in high school, you're allowed to come out on a called a day release programme. So the best one I saw was at Liverpool. So pretty much they just go and either pick up the kids, minibus them in or taxi them in to come and do their education in between the sessions, whether it be the morning activations, strength and conditioning, stay for the lunch, do some tuition and then back out for a double session. Or it could be something like we saw at Wigan where it was maybe 2 or 3 times a week for those lower category players to come in and just still be involved with the full-time programme, but they won't be in as much as what your Category 1 players, because Category 1, you'd have a welfare officer, an individual person who's delivering all the tuition, so it's a lot of funding behind it.
Jeez.
Yeah. Wow. And that's a quick version, by the way.
Summed up.
Yeah, summed up really nicely. Where would international academies fall in this...
You
got so excited, the internet just broke. You know, South Africa, you know how weird the issues we have here.
Yeah, I get you.
You want to ask that question again?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can, no? Yep.
So, yeah, I was wondering, where would international academies fall into that picture of, like, football academies in the UK?
Yeah.
And how would their relationship work between them?
I think this was probably my biggest frustration with the international academy. So, and the frustration comes from... Unfortunately, it comes from money. So speaking about those categories then, if you're in Category 1, which your Liverpool's, your Man United, it's not all Premier League teams. Some Championship teams are in there, like your Derby Counties are fantastic, and Leeds as well have a fantastic academy. But in a Category 1, if you input £1 million into your programme, the FA and the Premier League, majority of the Premier League, they'll match your £1 million. So whatever money you invest, they invest with you. Now, as you go down the table and down through the leagues, if you're putting £10,000 in, you're only getting £10,000 in. So you could be running your academy at a loss, which is a lot where the stumbling block comes from. So in terms of the international academy, it was all based on pay-as-you-play model. Now, in South Africa, the biggest struggle was the talent was there. There were some fantastic players I came across, but we couldn't develop it into a position where people were paying to play, where our academies over here, you don't pay. You get your kits, you get your food, you get everything done for you. It's only grassroots level that you pay to play. So, again, international academies are not funded directly by the first team. They're an independent franchise which develops their own money and try to be self-sustainable from that side. So the big thing is you just don't have the money financially to back it. So you'd still have the quality coaching, which we try to offer. The international academies will always have either ex-academy coaches, current academy coaches, and try and deliver different different syllabuses across the players and try and educate the coaches. But at the end of it, players are still paying. So your better players within South Africa would still be going to, for instance, Yates, Cape Towns or your Sundowns. They'd still be going in there rather than going to an international.
I've got a news update for you with regards to Ajax Cape Town. They don't exist anymore, man.
No way.
Yeah. They've changed the name. They've gone. They got relegated. I don't even think they're NFD. I think they've dropped to Vodacom. But that I'm not entirely sure of.
But it's fair what you're mentioning regarding that those ties of academic players that came through those systems, like, you know, Steven Pienaar's and the likes that actually worked up those type of systems to then work and play at those bigger, higher levels in Europe.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting, man, that you have these rules in place, like the categories. Do they get adhered to very well? And if they do they assist a lot in actually developing players in the bigger scheme of things?
This is my personal opinion. It's a lot of box ticking, if I'm being honest. I think it was developed back in 2012 where the categories came in. And the idea behind it is good because it's there to try and fund the clubs to make them sustainable, to allow the players to come into academies, to give them the best facilities, to give them the best coaching, to give them the best amount of time to develop them as individuals and both in a team format. However, what I found as an academy coach, a lot of my time was logging Claudio's 57 minutes that he played at the weekend, giving him a breakdown. But this is after every session. And
you
developing.
Can see, you can see Chris never coached me because I was a 19 player. I don't know, 57. Yeah.
that was 57 minutes out of 60, so it's giving you good game time there.
Are you trying to help his cause here? Yeah.
but you have to adhere to things. So everything you do is logged. So all the academies do it. So they all log the sessions. They all show you. But again, my frustration from an academy coach would be it kind of takes the creativity away from the coach. So by all means, have a skeleton and a syllabus to work from the kids. But it kind of takes away that little bit of creativity you have with a player where you see something you want to try and help and develop. And they do encourage you to do that. But still, you've got someone at the top within the academy saying, we need to adhere to this. We need to do this session because we've said we're going to do it. And it kind of becomes, in my mind, it came a bit stagnant and a bit robotic. Whereas I found when you're allowed to do, we'd have one or two sessions a week, we were allowed to go and work with small groups of like with the midfielders or whatever, and you could do your own stuff. And obviously because the session flows a lot better, I just found it was much better to try and create an environment where you can kind of thrive from, we'll try things, it might not work, and we'll kind of figure it out ourselves rather than having a set point. And there's a lot of meetings that go in prior to that. You might get to the session at 4:30. Session doesn't start till 5:30, but you sit down with your academy manager or your head of the academy, go through the session, work through your different players, work through the ones that you want to try and function on in that session. We do loads of ILPs, which is like individual learning plans, taking players in and out. I might coach, Claudio might go and assist, and it's all about working together. So it is well thought out. I just think it's too much all the time. I think sometimes it just needs to be a bit more fun and relaxed.
Yeah, it sounds like it leaves a lot of room out of, or leaves the experimentation out of the picture. Like, guys don't just get in and meet around and actually just see what they can come up with there and then.
I think with that as well, though, I think the counters kind of play devil's advocate on both sides. If you didn't have that structure and you allowed coaches to do whatever, then you'd never be able to track what you're doing. So I like the idea of the skeleton of this is what we're doing. Here's the picture that we want to try and paint. But I just think sometimes coaches need to be trusted a lot more. And again, a lot of these coaches are part-time. So I'd be going for my job, speeding across, getting there as quick as I can. And that'd become a second job, but it would require a lot of work in order to do that. I think that's the only thing that frustration comes from a lot of academy coaches over in the UK is the majority of us are part-time coaches. So we don't get paid an awful lot to do what we love. And again, we are privileged to be in that environment. But with anything, you're going to need time to dedicate it. So if you're working your 9 to 5 and you're trying to get across, it becomes quite difficult.
Yeah, that's a valid point. But one of the questions that are or were asked, Chris, is that, I mean, you've had the experience with South Africa and obviously the UK in terms of academies and talent. Yeah. Obviously, the international academy, like you said, is very different. However, if we're looking at academy structures within South Africa, most of them are privatized anyway. So it's what the kids, are the ones that are able to afford it, that benefit. But regards to, apart from that difference, what else, and everything that you mentioned, what is the real difference between how South Africa runs and the UK currently run?
I think it's just infrastructure. I think even though I was quite critical of just then saying about we don't want to work off that and it's a bit rigid, I didn't see any of that within South Africa. And again, I only scratched the surface, so I can't be hypercritical and say, oh, I saw this and this needs to happen. But a lot of the time, I think we have like kind of the platform to allow players to come in. All the clubs have established for, if you're talking about Ajax Cape Town folding, look at all our local teams have been around for 150 years as much as the professional teams have. I know grassroots teams in and around my area that have been here for years and years and years, whereas people just kind of pop up and, oh, it's a brand new academy, or it's this, it's that. There's no kind of heritage behind it and it keeps turning. There was some good, obviously, you know, from my time over there, Cloud, we worked with some grassroots ones to try and help with the venue and some great people involved. But the thing is to get your quality of coaching, you need your education. And your education comes from being able to dedicate the time. And again, it goes back to what I've just been saying. if you're only throwing out part-time jobs for coaches, how are you supposed to thrust yourself into that to try and give your all to something when you're thinking, how am I going to feed my family? How am I going to get this involved? And you can't kind of dedicate. So I just think if there's more opportunities funded, but again, let's not talk about your government, never mind our government, to try and get that funding is going to be some frustration. And I bet so many South African coaches will tell you the same, that they want to do it. Because there's some great, I came across some unbelievable coaches, some of the best I've ever worked with, and some great players, even within that small academy environment that I saw. I just think it's the whole infrastructure. Again, it comes back down to funding. I know it sounds quite boring, but if you have the financial capacity to try and help players and teams, then you're going to thrive. You're going to give them more opportunities.
Mm. Yeah, that's
awesome. Very fair. Yeah, and I've seen like several instances in South Africa where, you know, you find a lot of talent in different academies, but the academies get run down because of funding. And Cape Town is quite a big example of that, and like School of Excellence, which had produced a lot of players historically for the country, but now it's very difficult to actually say the funds are flowing that way. Do you find that the funds are speeding up the progression of younger players? So do you find that players are coming into the system younger and younger every year, professionally, that is?
They are, but it's kind of, they're coming in younger, but only because, for instance, that the higher clubs now are competing against each other. So, for instance, you can only, Liverpool, Man United, they can only have a certain mile radius of their academy. They can't just start going under eights, or they have pre-academy at 4 and 5 now, trying to get players to come in. Now, what they can do to try and dangle the carrot to that player and parents is, for instance, if you go to Man City, the facility is phenomenal. So if you can show that facility early on, your better players are going to go to the best facility. And it might be like kind of looking, thinking, oh, well, why would they not just go where the best environment is? But the best environment is where you feel more comfortable. If you go to a better facility and you feel like you've got more to do there, then you're going to be literally be harboring your talent more. So I do... The facility is a big thing because it attracts the player, but it's got to be the environment created by the coaches and the staff within it. And I've seen some, I won't name the clubs, I've seen some amazing academies with kind of a toxic environment, almost sterile, literally like you're going into a doctor's. And I've seen other ones, which is like a playground, and it's literally like a zoo, and it's too much. So it's trying to find that balance of having the right coaches and the right personality, but literally it's allowing the kids just to make mistakes and coming in and being pumped to come to coaching or come to training and just trying as much as they can. But it's getting younger and younger. 4 and 5 by like pre-academy, they'll come in and they're signing at what? U8, U9 now. So like 7, 8 years old, they're signing. And then they can go for money there, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, 7, 8.
Yeah, you can start to go. So like your basic players starting at like 9s and 10s, you can start going top categories for like a couple of grand per player.
Okay.
So it's crazy, and then it goes.
It sounds like it puts school books and classes at risk.
But that's an interesting question. Is I think one of the things that came out today in Sky Sports is that they said how lockdown has impacted academy hopefuls, and one of the things that they were saying, obviously, and Wonga is actually very clued up with this with his Kuva coaching, because he does that here in South Africa. He's actually one of the coaches I wanted to send you away. I think when you were around here, you're going to get to meet him just now. But they've got an app, obviously Kuva International Franchise, they've got an app where they do ball mastery sort of thing. So how much has that happened now in all these academies, especially your Liverpools and have they moved to apps and things like that to try and coach these kids during this period?
So obviously because the lockdown was like, it was eased and brought back in. So they were allowed to get certain players in for a certain amount of time. So only since this last lockdown that it's kind of dropped off again, but Liverpool United, the facilities and stuff that they have is ridiculous. So they're sending programs home. So whether they're sending interactive Zoom calls and they're meeting up with the players and just saying, all the players log on, this is what you need to go and do per se is homework. So they're still getting to do it, but they can't do what they do within an academy. They're literally just keeping the players ticking. It's very similar to how the teaching capacity would be now. Be able to send a body of work home, but you know as much as anyone, if you sit there and just read a book, it's not going to be as interactive as someone trying to teach you through it, test you, put you up against things. There's only so much one-on-one, ball against the wall or SAQ stuff you can do in your own garden without having that 1v1 environment or competing with your 3v3s at younger ages. You're not going to get that in a lockdown environment. And 100%, I'd say some form of mini regression. I don't think kids are going to kind of go backwards, but they're not going to be able to progress because they're not going to have the interactivity. Whether it's kids playing out on the street, they're not allowed to go and play out on the street. Mm. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is crazy. They're getting their work home,
100%. The top academies, even the smaller academies, are getting interactions with the players as much as they can. They're doing all they can at the academies.
But I guess that, like, the feedback that players would get once they're interacting with other players on the ground live, some might be better than them on the day. They'd have to improve on certain instances. It would be a lot of feedback that they'd be getting from other players around them.
That beats any coaching. Any 1v1, 2v2, any competition beats any coaching in my mind. Unless you've got that competition and you're breeding against each other and you're literally competing and working each other out, working out the puzzle, like I said, making those mistakes. We're just there to guide you. We're not there to give you every little bit of information, or you do create a robot. You want that thinking play. You want the person to try and figure it out and be a problem solver.
Okay.
Right. And that pretty much, Chris, thank you very much for that insight. I think it's time now for us to jump into the usual show that we do. We're going to discuss the Premier League football. We've got your expertise. Wonga, you're right. So here we go. Chris, so Wonga's the guy who's currently a Kiva coach. We've got Matinho. He just solves all sort of creative problems, goes into corporate institutions and things. And then Selo, United sort of fan. You know what I think about United fans, Chris.
He's a financial
guy. Yeah, and you want... Do you
On that note, Chris. Which team do you support, sir?
I'm a Man United fan.
Have you guys ever heard of a Liverpool academy coach supporting United?
I had to keep that on the wraps for so long, you know that, Claudio.
Can I tell you how I met Chris? This is the best. How I met him was, he came to South Africa with a whole bunch of the other Liverpool academy coaches. And the head coach at the time comes to me and he says, listen, we're going to play someone here and I want you to meet him and I want you like to take him out and all that sort of thing. Not that I had to do that because Chris made himself, very open, came to me and said like how are things going. But he said, his name's Anthony. He's like, listen, Claudio, but there's one thing you need to know about him. And it's, I know you're a diehard Liverpool fan, but, and you got to keep this on the low, but he supports Man United. my whole mind just went, And when I told Chris, it's the best. The first thing I said to him was like, he's like, hey, you know, Claudio, my name's Chris. I was like, yeah, I heard you support United. He's like, who told you that?
Looking for the rivals. You could have like spiked some drinks and some of the juice, whatever. They could have already time you when they play United.
It was hard. Every time we had to speak, I had to say we, and I was like, oh, this is hurting. We had to say we.
Oh man.
So that's Chris's dark secret. But
well done for the talent that you've helped produce at Liverpool.
By the way, actually, before we carry on with that, who's like the best academy product that's come through, like, you know, that you've seen that's maybe, I don't know, gone on to become pro or just didn't make it, you know?
Well, I think probably recently, working at Wigan Athletic, there's a player who got sold to, I can see you down in the bottom corner, to Spurs, Alfie Devine. He's literally been on the bench. He was 16, I think he was on the bench last week. He is incredible. And he was a releasee from Liverpool. He got released at 12 or 13 from Liverpool. And a lot of players go on to Wigan Athletic. And he is, for me, as a purist, technically, he's just got everything. He's got an engine to travel and get round. Comfortable on both feet, confident, fearless, proper player, and still puts himself about a bit. If you've seen some of the clips, I think it was in with Danny Drinkwater, wasn't he? When he's getting involved in that.
He's a solid youngster. He really is good. I didn't actually realise this from Wigan. That's really cool.
Oh, he's grounded as well, mate. Such a lovely kid. I hope he does so well.
Yeah. I mean, Spurs, we're quite lucky. We get quite a lot of youngsters who come through our youth teams. Not always right from under 8, under 9, but we get quite a lot of guys. They don't all make it, but they always, they always seem to really love Spurs and stay kind of in touch with the club. You look at the likes of Ryan Mason, you know, and he didn't.
It's by far my favourite academy I've ever been to, Spurs. It's incredible. It's honestly, like, it is. In terms, like I was saying before, the city has almost like an airport feel. Like, it's too big, it's a bit empty, but listen, it's still amazing. Liverpool's is, it's brand new facility, it's incredible, but the feeling down at Spurs was, we took the 16s down there. Such a good place. Good people as well.
Yeah.
Hey, wow. Wow, you guys are doing something right there, Bet.
Spurs are winning it, Stella,
you know? It's great that you've given Matt this validation, because we hear every week giving him shit about his side, and you're actually telling him you're doing something right. I'm convinced.
I think we should start reviewing.
And this week is no different, yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. But let's start with one of the games. One of the games, because we normally, on this show in particular, we normally talk about the upcoming fixtures. But because these sort of FA Cup results happen this week, we're just going to touch on them. The first game, obviously, for the two United fans that we have. And also, I don't know why we always end up with two United fans. This is not, and yeah, anyway.
Yeah, Man United something won, has to get solved, yeah.
Something has to change. Man United winning 1-0, guys. What are your thoughts about that? I'm going to start with Selo, and then we'll move on to Chris in terms of the actual game and the performance and the results.
Ah, man, it was the first half. We started off not too badly, actually. You know, we created some chances. But the second half was just flat. Like, it was boring, you know. I almost fell asleep. So, you know, you have to wonder with the lineup that we had. And I think also now a lot of United fans are coming out trying to target or trying to ask questions about Donny van de Beek and saying that he didn't have a great game, which is unfortunate because, you know, a player needs to be played in a, you know, preferred position, or a player may be playing to the tactics of the coach, because seemingly the tactics from the coach was for him to be right up with Martial. And what would then happen is that he would often run past him, and then he would make the run past Martial, but the ball doesn't go to him. You know what I mean? So he didn't get much touches in the game. He didn't affect the game much. But I think the tactics weren't the right tactics for him, because he's a player that wants to, you know, you play him the ball, he gets the ball, he releases it quickly. 1-2, 1-2. You know what I mean? That Ajax type football that he wants to obviously get the ball and play it around, obviously. And he's not like a Bruno Fernandes player who's going to sit on the ball for a bit, create space, and then obviously make a pass or get some space to make a shot for himself. So I think the tactics for Donny weren't great, and obviously now, you know, the United fan base will just ask questions, you know, saying, hey, he's not the right man for Man United and so forth, you know, which is unfortunate, man. I think he just needs to be given a run of games, and also it's tough for a player who doesn't play for a month and then has to play a game. The intensity won't be at the level of the other players, you know what I mean? Telles did play well. He's another player who doesn't get much game time, but he did play well. Also it showed that the fact that they only took him off into extra time, which showed normally if a player's not doing well, they might bring on a Luke Shaw, who's obviously who's having a great season. But Telles had a great game. But yeah, man, it's an interesting one. I think Solskjaer needs to, you know, you need to attack, man. You know, you can't just sit back for too long, you know.
It sounds like even if Donny van de Beek has three or four good games, his prospect of like solidifying his position in this Man United squad over the season are very, very slim.
Hey, man, it's a tough one. It's a sad one. I don't know if you saw when he came off. He had this look on his face, guys. Like, he looked so sad. I felt bad for him. You know, he looked across, and then he kind of saw that Bruno's about to come on. He's like, oh, when Bruno's about
again
to come on, that means I'm coming off. You know, whereas maybe Solskjaer should have rather removed Matic, put Donny next to Fred, and then bring on Bruno, you know. And obviously he didn't do that. So it's unfortunate, but these things happen, you know. I don't know obviously how Chris feels about the situation of Donny and the performance.
Before you give your opinion, Wonga, you wanted to say something. I can see something's itching.
I just wanted to ask you, do you think that Donny, I mean, even given what you're saying in terms of now they're playing out of position, he hasn't played for long, and now when you play him, you play out of position, completely different things to what the guy's usually been doing. I mean, could you classify Donny van de Beek as a panic buy from Solskjaer?
Because
I don't
think
I don't see how they use it.
my honest opinion is that Donny was a signing from the club and not a signing from Solskjaer. Okay. That's what I feel.
There we go, Chris.
Yeah, agreed. I think you're talking about him playing out of position. He played in that 10 role. It's just the fact that within Ajax, they only had one sitting midfielder and allowed two people to go and roam. I think you summed it up perfectly. He literally just played on the back line. And the fact is, we had Fred trying to play balls. He breaks the game up really well for me, Fred, but tries to do far too much. It's like an excited kid. He breaks up the ball and he looks to try. You give it 5 yards and he wants to try and turn him or try and play a 40-yard pass, which isn't in his locker. So I would have liked to have seen. I'd like to see, because when I think there's a Champions League game when Van der Beek played is pretty much like an 8. I'd like to see him that little bit deeper. If you're going to play a McTominay or a Fred sitting, play him with Bruno, allow him to link, and like you just said before, use your 1-2s to get up the pitch and try and link play. Whereas him trying to get in behind constantly when the ball was just going wide. I've got some stats down here. 17 attempts, 3 off target, 5 on. So look how many, it's like 9 block shots, because it was just stifled when it got to the back 6. They just sat in and blocked it. It was a painful game. But I'm confused why his subs wind me up, Solskjaer.
He takes too long. He's never made a substitution within 15 minutes of the second half. He's never made a substitution in the 60th minute. He makes a sub 75th minute. That's the average.
Martial's walking around, and 85th minute, Cavani comes on. 85th minute. The game was there to be won. They were poor, West Ham, and they've been pretty good, to be fair, in a good bit of form. I expected quite an open game, but I'm just blindsided.
I just want to say one thing. Firstly, it's been 32 minutes, and not one of you have said happy birthday on the show. The next thing I want to say, I think Kevin knows the drill, guys. Today is a Thursday. It's pre-match community. What we're going to do is, those of us that have drinks, Kevin, you choose a name of a player. As soon as you choose that name, every time you type it, we have to take a sip of our drink, and that's how we're going to play it. See, Chris is packing. I know he's doing well. I don't know if you've got something to drown your sorrows on.
Don't worry. You know, man. The supply is always good.
Yes, sir.
All right, Kevin, so don't take your time. We need a name ASAP. You give us a name, and as soon as that name pops up, you know we're going to take a sip. Wonga's even got something to drink today. Look at that. Yeah.
Water.
It's nice to have another United fan, so I can ask you, you know, there's something that Solskjaer likes to do when he subs, right? Is that he subs the wrong player often, right? Right? So when Man United plays, especially when we have Greenwood, Martial and Rashford on the field, right? I always feel sometimes, in this game for instance, it should have been either Rashford or Martial. Either or. Yeah. Not Greenwood, because I felt that Greenwood was having a better game than the other two. You know what I mean? So, whereas Martial, in the first half especially, he was holding up the ball well, linking up nicely. And then Rashford does this thing, which I hate so much. He runs directly towards a player and then just runs, and then he loses the ball. He doesn't have that final, I don't know, try to pass it or try to cross it. You know, he just runs straight and he closes himself down. And I'm like, what are you doing, Rashford? You know what I mean? Just make the right decision at the right time. You know, so I think that Ole always makes the wrong sub when he does make a sub. So what do you think about that in terms of like Greenwood always being the person that gets subbed?
I think he has like his go-to safe options. The same when you were saying before about Tellers getting limited game time. It's Tellers for sure at 65 minutes, whether he's played well or he's not. And it's the same when you're saying there, like, I don't see Martial as a 9 anyway. I think he's been thrust into that position because we didn't have it. So it obviously wasn't working, and we need someone to try and work those two centre-halves. So that should have been done at 60 minutes as well. The Greenwood one, I think there's an element of him trying to protect him, but I agree with you from the other night. I think he was the kind of that live wire from the right-hand side. I don't think he's been playing his best recently, but again, it's so difficult. You mentioned with Van der Beek, they're coming in and out and dropped him for 10-15 minutes, there's no impact, and then you're taking him off after 60 minutes. It's just, I just think with his substitutions as well, he never seems to change it tactically. It's always like for like.
True.
Just goes, like you say, and then he'll just go Greenwood off. I'll put Rashford from the left over to the right where he's ineffective. And highlighting on Rashford, my frustration comes as well. I think the reason why he's not a world-class player is his decision-making. He's got the elements to his game, his pace, his finishing, but it's always there in glimpses. It's not there consistently. It's always that extra touch, or he wants to do something a little bit too extravagant in the wrong time, wrong place. So it's just that ruthlessness. I don't think we've got enough ruthless players who are going to take the opportunity. Same with Martial. Martial's got so much talent. It's so frustrating because he just saunters around the pitch at the moment. I don't know if he's low on confidence or what it is.
Yeah, he's not ruthless to be a player that maybe scores like a 4 goals in a game type of thing.
No, not when he burst on the scene. He looks like he was like a mini Henry about 2-3 years ago when he burst on the scene with his finishing. Then he's just not kicked on. I mean, he's got a Ballon d'Or. He's got a Ballon d'Or thing in his contract. Bonus with Ballon d'Or. I mean, that's crazy.
But last season was great. Last season was great for him. You know, obviously the amount of goals
and the assist
he had. I think this season has just obviously been, rocked with some confidence. He hasn't been at the peak that he showed last season. So obviously, I think, you know, it's been good that we've got at least a Cavani option, so he can actually bench. But you know, to go forward for the rest of the season, we do need him, Greenwood or Rashford to actually contribute towards the goals, because you can't just, you know, look at Bruno the whole time and then look at Cavani. You just need to have the other guys contributing.
But if you're talking about your front four for me is Rashford off the left, Cavani, Bruno in behind, and then Greenwood off the right. I don't think Martial gets into the picture for me. I don't think he's effective enough.
There we go, lads. The name is Hudson Odoi, Caverners. He's made it. Our throats are dry.
Great name.
that's his favourite player.
Shout out. It's a good player.
Good player.
Shout out to that, Kevin.
Before we move on from the Man United sort of thing, we've got two United fans here. And the question, I'm not, if you've been following us, you know the sort of heated debates Sil and I have about Martial. But the question I want to ask, and this is an open one, and this is a fair one, I want to know, realistically, the future for the player. Do you guys, as a club, should you start looking to offload this player, or do you want to hang on to him? Because personally, you know what I would do. Everyone here knows what I would do.
I think Claudio would do a swap deal for Firmino. That's what Claudio would do.
That's
what Claudio would do. Get a defensive striker in there.
That's what Claudio would do.
Training order. I'll put a training order for Martial.
He would at least take someone who at least tries to score some goals, as opposed to someone who doesn't even try.
At Man City, that was a hell of a strike, man. At least he runs. But my question is, before you deflect, that's a deflection. The man knows he has to answer a tough question now.
Yeah, no, I think he still has a role to play within Man United. He just played his 250th game together with Rashford during the week. And what I think their stats are quite similar. Just that Rashford has 4 more goals in that time, and I think the assists, Martial has more assists than Rashford in the 250 games. You need to always have quality options within a squad. So I think right now he isn't a starter, right? And that's just because of the form that he's shown, that he hasn't been on form, but he definitely does deserve to be within the squad. You know what I mean? If you look at a team like Liverpool, who's got zero quality on the bench, whereas Man United, you do need some. You still need to have quality on the bench. You know what I mean? So I think right now he's on the bench, and yeah, you need to have the quality on the bench. You know what I mean? I don't think there's any other bench player currently who's better than
Kevin,
him, you know?
I think Kevin's saying, it. Time to move on. Chris, final thing in terms of yes or no, do you keep him, don't you keep him?
Get rid.
There we go. Yeah. Solid. This is a football man, Selo. Do you understand that? Football man.
Wow.
The story is still building.
I'd also be a football man if I'm struggling to get into top 4.
Yeah. No one's struggling here. Listen to this, like. Anyway, okay. FA results: Everton 5, Spurs 4. Matt, what the hell happened here? Bale ruled himself out of this game. He wasn't even on the bench.
Yeah, look, I think part of me thinks maybe Mourinho did this on purpose, because we've been complaining. There's been so many Spurs fans complaining about Mourinho, and I wonder if he was like, you know, doing that thing where, like, you see what you had before me, you know, because there we are scoring four, conceding five. It was a very Spurs kind of result, especially five goals, five individual errors led to it. Defensively, we were just off. It was fantastic to see us go in at a game. Don't get me wrong. It was awesome to see the team really having a go and scoring some goals. We haven't done that in ages. And from an attacking perspective, there were some really good performances. Son and Kane were again kind of, they found one another and they were both looking dangerous the whole game. You know, there was some, Winks was a bit off when he came on, but defensively we were just all over the place. Lloris had a bit of a mare. I mean, if Nick, he could tell us about it in more detail, but he really looked off. Just seemed to, I think the first one kind of threw him, and then from there he didn't recover. But even, it wasn't just him, to be fair. The entire defence, I mean, Alderweireld was giving way too much space away in and around the edge of the box. He wasn't his usual kind of, he's normally a very reliable, he keeps tight, he does his job, he's always in the right place. And that was off. And it was weird, watching the game, you start to get a sense of inevitability about it. You know, as a Spurs fan, you kind of know this feeling, like, we're going to lose this game, we're going to give it away. And I didn't, to be honest, I was surprised we came back from 3-1 down. It felt like like I said, it was a weird one because there were positives, and we obviously don't expect ourselves there was a big part of the Spurs support were like, we're probably going to end up giving away the FA Cup anyway because we've got other things we want to focus on. We want to lose more extravagantly in Europe and more extravagantly in the league, for example.
not overwork Kane and Son.
Exactly. But at the same time, it was slightly frustrating because if we'd been slightly tighter at the back, you know, just done what we've been doing for quite a large part of the season, we could have come away from this game at least 4-1 or 4-2. So it was frustrating to see those individual errors kind of play a big role. And at the same time, it being exciting to see us attacking and that. But just overall a very weird, frustrating game. I'm kind of in two minds about it. At the moment, I'm a bit sort of confused by Spurs in general. I don't know what we're doing at the moment. I'm very kind of,
I've heard you mention that it's been frustrating when Spurs win and it's been frustrating when Spurs lose. So I don't know which way you actually want these frustrations.
These Spurs fans, they run by Daniel Levy. They're just never content, bro. That's
close tough.
You know what it is? I think what set us up for failure was, if you asked us at the beginning of the season, a lot of Spurs fans weren't expecting a great season from us. We'd kind of had a mixed bag in Operation Restart last season, and it didn't feel like we were going to start this season off really well. And then, especially after the first result against Everton, it was kind of like, well, that's that. We're going to have a terrible season. And then we played really well for a really long time. We had that fantastic period, some really good results against City. We really obviously did well against Arsenal, which at the time wasn't a big thing because it turned out Arsenal was shit for ages back then. But
Before you continue, Matt, look at that 49 undefeated. He's still got that shirt. I don't know where that came because that hasn't been out the whole season.
It's the first time.
This thing has been here.
It's been 49 what months since you were undefeated for an extended period of time. So
no one's done better. It's fine. No one's done better. That's what we're all.
But look, I think it's weird. If we hadn't done so well, if we hadn't had that period of that purple patch of doing really well, I think Spurs fans would kind of be fairly happy with where we're sitting because we're progressing nicely. We've obviously done well in the Carabao Cup and we're doing all right in the Europa League and that. But I think because we played so well for that period of time, we kind of saw what this team could do if everything clicks.
Yeah.
And that's what's frustrating now is to kind of, now that we've progressed, it's sort of like you guys were doing this right just a couple of weeks ago. What's going on? What's missing? And it's hard to say what it is because it's largely the same players. It seems to be the same kind of approach, but the intensity is not quite there. And I think that's what's kind of upsetting Spurs fans. Because the thing, and it's also Mourinho's a victim of his own success because he's the kind of manager where when he does well, you forgive the other things. The style might be a bit stagnant and he's a bit of an angry young man. But, you know, when it starts to turn against him, when we're not getting the results, then you start to see like, but he's playing negative football and we're losing and he's getting angry all the time. It's sort of like, you know, that now it's not worth it. You're not worth the drama. And so that kind of goes against him. And I've seen a lot of talk about
it's like Mourinho had this moment, right? We all know when he was great, he was amazing. You know, he was entertaining. He was fun. He had like this sort of tongue in cheek sort of way. And then it started not going so. He went to Madrid, he came back, and everything was so cynical and bitter. And even that's what happened with these last couple of jobs at United. And with Spurs, he came in a little bit like, slightly more humble. There was a little bit more of that tongue in cheek, be like, oh, this is somewhat the shadow of the old Mourinho that we know. And now slowly these, I don't know if he's just frustrated with the tools that he's working with in terms of the players that he has, or, I mean, we know he rested Kane yesterday and the result was crazy. It's like the impact that the one player has. But something I want to ask in particular, this whole Bale scenario, Wenger's a huge advocate for Bale. Huge. And I'm curious now, with regards to what we've all agreed upon, and like we're writing this guy off. And I'm going to ask you now, Wenger, and then I want to follow up with what Chris thinks. In terms of, would you still stick with this guy, Wenger? Even after everything in terms of how this has all played out?
Yeah, I mean, look, the way it's going now, Claudio, I mean, it's things that are developing.
That's an annoying lad.
I wouldn't have.
I already drank, so.
I mean, that's too quick. What I was thinking from.
Doesn't work like that. So
him coming from Madrid not playing. What's the loading?
No.
I was drinking.
So, what I was saying is, so him coming from Madrid, I would. Look, he's a world class player, number one. Let's put it out there. Everyone knows that, what he's capable of doing. For me, I was thinking that, you know, he's obviously I'm not too sure what's happening with his life, whatever he's decided. But you think a man on the bench who likes playing soccer, would want to play, comes back home to the team where he was successful at. And I mean, geez, even if he gave Tottenham 60-70% of what he could do, it would still be good. And I mean, that's what I thought at least he could be able to give them. But now it's looking, hey, I don't know, man, the guy's not playing. I don't know if it's what.
And he wants to sit in the stands.
So now you're trying to wonder, what is the problem? Is it Madrid or is it really this guy? Or is this guy just the problem now? He's just tired now. Now he just doesn't play. But look, I'll always like the guy for what he's done in football. He can say Tottenham, screw you, and I'll even like him even more. But honestly, I think there's nothing he can do for me to hate the guy. There's nothing he can do. He's a quality player. When he was on form,
but he's playing Spurs. How can you not hate him? I don't understand this.
He's not playing.
No, but Claudio, come on, Claudio. I'm telling you, there's a player at Everton that you appreciate, don't you?
I'm not going to answer this
question. A couple of players at Everton.
The thing about Bale as well, the thing I like about Bale is, he started off at the left wing, many doubts about him, and him becoming actually a professional footballer. Never let alone becoming, one of the best players in the world and getting signed from Madrid. There was a huge doubts about him.
What you're talking about is his story, and he's got a great story. He reached his height, and now the issue is we're talking about the present. He's gone from Madrid. He looks like, he looks tired, and now you're still saying you like him for what you'll remember him for, not about what he's doing now.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, look, now he's going. Sorry, Matt, you continue.
I can relate to that a lot because, I mean, as a Spurs fan especially, you know, I saw when Bale came up and he joined us as a left back from Southampton, you know, weird little orangutan looking dude. And he,
number three,
he played for us for a full solid year before he actually won a game in a Spurs shirt. And everyone was kind of, especially because when he came through as a left back, we still had Asa Okotu there and everybody loved him. So he never really looked like he was going to make it. Then moved him up to the left wing and it was a revelation. Like overnight his game changed and he blew up. And the stuff he did for us was incredible. And he was a world-class player. And that's I'm definitely not arguing with that. And I think that's what makes it really hard. Because then you see him come back and we want that memory, we want that feeling, that whole, and that period in Spurs history was fantastic. We had Modric and Fanafar and, you know, Defoe and Keane at their peak and that. And it was just such a fantastic time to be, such a fun time to be a Spurs fan. Not that we won anything, but it was just fun. And
Matt, do you think it could be about position, like the position he's playing, that he's playing out of correct position?
Guys, he ruled himself out of the game yesterday. He had one session. He had a training session.
With Madrid.
I would do that as well.
He said, no, I need to go spend more time with the sports science team. I'm feeling something's tight. But asked after the game, Mourinho was even like, I can't talk about Bale's, not yet, number one. Number two, he's like, I can't talk about an injury. The Oak City had something tight and he wants to do extra work. This is a typical, he still thinks he's working at Madrid. Then you've got Kane, you're strapping both those ankles, putting in something to get something. I mean, look at the talking shoes of the players. Mourinho's he's written that over.
Say, and I think there was a time where who was it, was at City where Guardiola had one of those, a player who said he needs to, you know, you can't tell someone they're not sore. And I think that there is that issue where players have got to know their own bodies and kind of say how far they can push it. And then you do get players like Kane would play if he was in a wheelchair. That's just the player he is.
Yeah.
But Bale is obviously at the moment. And I think a lot of it's down to the relationship that he has with the coach. Obviously also he kind of sees himself as different to a certain extent, given where he's come from and what he's achieved in the game, which isn't being borne out by his influence at Spurs, is the truth of it. He's not in our starting 11 at the moment, not on current form. And that's really hard. And I think what makes it difficult for Spurs fans is that we want him to be what he was. And in truth, when it comes up time for renewal of this or sending him back, we're going to send him back because
he has to go back.
It won't leave. It's not going to damage the side for him to go back to Madrid. It's really sad because we've got memories, but we're not going to sign Darren Anderton again. We can't really keep Bale around.
How much longer does his loan agreement even have? Like, it's 4 more months and he has to go back. There's no way he's going to be able to salvage all of this now.
Yeah. There's been no
Chris,
talk
you've been very quiet, Chris. You've been...
I'm just taking all this in.
It's a typical coach. He waits to see everything and then he's like, okay, let me give my assessment now. Let me check this.
It's a different club as well, man. You know what I mean? He doesn't have any attachment. He has attachment to the greatest club in England.
You see now, all of a sudden, you are best mate. Imagine you met Tello while you were in South Africa.
Chris, you must let me know when you're South Africa again, man. I'll take you out. We'll go for some beer tasting. All on me, man.
it'd be a couple of days event then. It'd be a good few days.
Exactly. Thank you.
No. Just to sum up the Bale. I was so excited to see him coming back. I think you kind of alluded to the fact of how good he was. I didn't expect to see him the same player, but I thought he'd probably play a different role. I thought he'd play more as a centre forward when he was coming in, just to allow him to get into his shape and kind of allow him to lead the line. But for someone who hasn't played for 3 years, you can't just keep dipping him in and out and expecting to come on and be explosive. Even when he played against Marine, I can't tell you how low that level is compared to the Premier League. And all credit to Marine and the FA Cup, he's not bothered. What is he picking up? Is it 300 grand?
Yeah, he's getting something like that. 320.
What needs to motivate him? He's literally just come back here probably to converse with his family, be closer to home, and that's it. He's not motivated. There's no way he's motivated. I mean, the day he signed, he was teeing off with Daniel Levy. He's playing golf. Like, having a medical. Yeah. He's playing golf. It shows him on the golf course. He's not fussed. I'm disappointed because I was excited and I didn't think he'd explode back onto the scene, but I did think there'd be moments of brilliance where he'd either score a couple of worldies and you start going, oh, well, okay, he's useful for you. He'd come off the bench and be an impact. But even when he played, I can't remember what game it was, he played like 65 minutes and he kept looking over at the bench just like, I'm not bothered.
And that is a real shame.
It's such a shame because he was phenomenal. And as well, I think whatever's happened in Madrid has caused this. And it can't just be the player, but I think the players just can't give up.
And he's kind of packed his bags. He's kind of like saying, look,
he's content, and he's just take his money. Yeah. I'll just finish my career out. I mean, as soon as I saw that, what was that flag that he put up when he was playing for Wales?
Wales golf Madrid.
Yeah, done. He was done then. That was it. He was done. I just don't think he's motivated. Like, it's such a shame for Spurs because when you hear about it on paper, when you would have had like Son, Kane, and then you had like the likes of Morrow, like, that is such an exciting front five, isn't it? It's like amazing. And then he's just done nothing. Mourinho must be like pretty pissed as well. The fact that he can't get anything out of him because he's had the relationship prior to it as well.
Even in the change room, the fact that you mentioned Son and Kane, in the change room, those two players, they're like national team captains, you know, they're the type of players that'll liven everybody up in the change room. To have a Bale in there saying, look, I'd rather sit in the stands, it's quite concerning. It's very, very concerning. Because you know the players around him would put 110%, 150%.
Part of that is also a Mourinho thing. He does seem to, wherever he goes, there does always seem to be a certain set of players who end up on the outside. And Spurs, it's happened to Elliot. Yeah. You look at him, he's kind of, he seems to be sort of fed up with the whole project and just sort of happy to sit on the outskirts, which is also a shame because that's another player who has had a wonderful career at Spurs and has done so much for us as a club. And he's become completely ineffectual in the Mourinho era. And it's weird because Mourinho is one of those coaches who you can point to individuals in our squad who've clearly benefited from his presence. You know, guys like Aurier and Ndombele and Sissoko, who've and even Kane and Son, that, not that they were bad before, they were phenomenal before, but they've gone up a level since Mourinho's been there. But at the same time, there's other players who've had their games completely shut down. Yeah. And he does seem to be that kind of coach who either you're going to do the things the way I want and you're going to be phenomenal, or I'm going to ignore you and you're going to have a horrible couple of years. And that is, that's another thing that's something to consider. It is a shame because overall, you know, you look at when we lost Pochettino, it was horrible. It was gutting. But when Mourinho came in, on balance, there's been a lot of positives and there are good things. And I'm pleased that he's been there and I'm pleased with what we've done and how we've progressed in a lot of ways. When you try to think about it in, you know, unemotional terms and just think about it intellectually, what we've done over the course of his time there, I think mostly it's been positive. But then there are these niggling doubts, like what's happened to Ali? Why is he not able to get the best from Bale? You know, why are we still kind of not solid at the back and stuff? But I think it is the thing with Mourinho is that if he doesn't give you silverware, he doesn't give you enough to want him around. Whereas with Pochettino, he never won us a trophy, but I'd take him back in a heartbeat. Just because of what he did for the club in terms of making us fun and lovable, and you could see the squad all loved each other.
Yeah, exactly. I think when Mourinho came over to Tottenham, we were worried about, you know, the Tottenham players being a little bit too soft for that kind of a manager. Yeah, and he brings that sternness, that level of coaching where he's a football manager and not necessarily a direct coach for the players.
Look, Man United almost sold Luke Shaw.
What is that?
No, sorry. No, it's all good. I was just throwing a comment, like the fact that Man United almost sold Luke Shaw because of Mourinho. But look at Luke Shaw. He's the best left back in the Premier League this season. You know, so yeah.
No, man. Best left back in the Premier League.
But Chris, am I wrong?
What a good question to ask, Chris.
Luke Shaw is the form Premier League is the form left back. He's created the most chances as any fullback has created more chances than Luke Shaw this season. He's on form. He's the best left back in the Premier League. Only left back that's touching him this season is Kieran Tierney. That's the only left back. Other ones have been poor this season.
But I agree with the comment has to be he's the best in form left back.
Yeah, this season. I'm saying this season. The form this season. Only Kieran Tierney is the only one. And your Chilwell, as I said with Chilwell, man, he's an
eight. Chilwell, it's tricky.
Looks amazing at the front and open at the back, you know?
It's tricky as well. He hasn't had as much time as Shaw and he's been like in contention with two managers coming into the fray as well, so it's quite tricky for him.
Chris was saying something. Sorry, I interrupted.
All it was to kind of sum up the Spurs and the Bale. I know Bale's kind of getting all the flack here, but I would have just liked to have seen him once he got his level of fitness, put him in for four or five games. You can't again dipping him in. You just persist with him playing for your 67 minutes, and if he's not doing that for four games, but he was in and out. And then, again, I think he just became despondent then, thinking, well, I'm not even getting game time here. It must be so... Mentally, he must be a mess as well. It's a nice position to be in with all that cash, but...
But if you're Mourinho, can you realistically put a player out for a five-game run who you can see is kind of in it, but he's not in it? You know what I mean? Like, you've got
to
be...
To build his confidence, to build his sharpness...
For instance, let's not talk about four or five games. If he's doing it after three games and you drag him after 65, you've given him every opportunity. If you play him for three games, 65 minutes, you've got to drag him. I mean, he's not been a catalyst for people like getting at him. He's not been exposing any fullbacks, has he really? He just hasn't been doing anything on the ball. He's been sitting a little bit too deep. He's just been riding and letting the game pass by. But I don't think he's been... I've not watched the game where I thought, oh, they're open on that side because Bale's there. It's just been inactive when he's been in possession. So I don't think he's been like despondent out of possession, or he's not been affecting them in the defensive shape. But he's just like you said, it's so frustrating when you know someone's got that talent in him and he just isn't doing it.
That's so true what you mentioned, because it feels like, you know, Bale should be given the opportunity. You know, he comes from a club like Real Madrid. He comes with all the history of the club at Tottenham. he should be given an opportunity to put his fair foot forward. And you can't expect his fair foot forward to be his best foot after 3 years of not playing. Yeah. You've got to give him some good game time to actually produce.
That would mean pulling off Stevie Bergwijn, who Bergwijn.
That's fine.
Having but a lad, but the lad, yeah, exactly. The lad is giving away the manager.
Every time he's on the field, I mean, you can still, again, he's the kind of player where you want to question the decision-making at the last minute. He kind of also needs coaching, and at times he does make the wrong choice and stuff. But he gives 100% every time. And if I was a coach, I'd also want to say, I agree with you completely. I think give Bale a run might kind of energize and cause something in him. But that would also mean saying to a player like Bergwijn, appreciate everything you've done, but I want to do this with this other player, even though for a couple of games he might be shit. So I'm going to make you sit bench just because you're not Bale. And I think that's also a tough one to make. And so it is hard because...
I think it's too late now, isn't it? It's too late for Bale. I'm talking maybe... This is before Christmas time. That could have happened. Yeah. I think it's too late. Yeah. But I think it'd be interesting to see your interpretation of Stiger Bergwijn, because I thought... I don't think he's gone backwards but in terms of his creativity, I think he works hard. He's brilliant in terms of applying the press and being disciplined. But he's not the player that we saw as soon as he arrived at Spurs. I was like, wow, this player.
Yeah, his finishing was a lot sharper.
Yeah, it just looks like he's so concentrating on all his defensive duties rather than being offensive.
I find also that when he's close to when he's in or around the box, if he gets the ball, he seems so obsessed with having to get a goal. Like maybe it's going on internally where they're comparing him to Son and Kane, and he's obviously not playing him in. So it could be that because it seems like there are times where he could just square the ball and create a chance. He tries to fashion a shot for himself.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's mentally he's thinking, shit, these other two the other two front guys are just banging him in all the time, and I'm not. And
trying to prove his worth,
being another Bobby Firmino, I guess. And and I think it could be also because he's a bit younger, so that decision making is a bit off. But I agree with you. He's certainly not as kind of electric as he was when he first on the scene. But I still really like him inside. I think we're a better side when he's there because he does give defenders kind of a headache because he's running at them and he does try to get in behind. And his pace it really does stretch defenders out of position. It does free up space for the likes of Kane and Son, and even for like Ndombele behind the, in front, between defence and midfield to then do some stuff because Bergwijn drags people out of position. So for that reason, I'd keep him in the side simply because of what he gives us. But I think he seems a bit hung up on not getting enough goals.
Yeah, that's a valid point there, Matt. And I think now it's actually time. Great chat, guys. We're going to move on to the fixtures for this coming weekend. First game up largely because I think, jeepers, I've never seen Wonga so disinterested, and I can't blame him. Could you imagine speaking for like Man United that long? I tried moving. I actually think I moved the topic on earlier. Wonga, Arsenal versus Leeds. Tell me, man, what do you think is going to happen here? Leeds are 1 point above Arsenal. They've got a game in hand. Surely this is a game you should be winning at home against Leeds, against the side.
Wonga's quiet. He's going to fight relegation.
Isn't this the battle for number 11? Battle for number 11?
Yeah, mid-table clash. It's a huge mid-table clash, this one.
Yeah, it just cancels out one of those game in hands for Leeds. But nothing much. But for me, I think really Arsenal, they need to win it. I'm thinking, maybe it's also because I support the team as well, I think they'll have more to win it than Leeds. I think Leeds have good players. Can't deny that. But I mean, they've been scoring. They've literally, they've scored a goal. They've conceded a goal for every goal they've scored. It's 38 and 38.
Yeah. It's always exciting facing Leeds because you have an opportunity to score some goals. Huh?
Yeah. So if Arsenal doesn't score this game, ask questions. But, I think Saka's on good form. We did mention that last week. Martinelli definitely for me, I would start the guy. Every game Martinelli has started, I've watched him play. He's literally looked like, I mean, he looks like he wants to score. Looks like he wants to cause problems. Looks like he wants a goal. And that's honestly the one thing I like about Martinelli. I mean, he's sort of same thing that Matt was saying about Harry Kane is that, I mean, if he would play with a broken leg, but obviously you can't do something like that. Partey, I think we're beginning to find out that he's got a, got one injury that I think they need to sort out there.
Which injury is it?
Games. I think it's hammy. It's a hamstring or something.
He's got injured. He's the one who hasn't played his entire career until he joined Arsenal.
Yeah. Oof. So,
single game through injury, then he joins Arsenal for a matter of months and he's on the table. What do you guys do to players behind the scenes? Are you guys
that room temperature water?
I think things are getting right.
Like, come on.
That's possible. I mean, you heard who was that kid? It was Guendouzi and David Luiz boxed things out. I don't know how to say. Look, Partey out this weekend. Who else is it? I think they said Tierney out as well. And Tierney's been exceptional. Same mentality as Martinelli. The nice thing about Tierney is left back, and he's taking those another right back on. He's taking guys on, trying to get in crosses. And you know, I mean, in soccer now, as Chris being a coach as well, you know, the coaches a player could go play 1v1. Was good on 1v1. You want him in your team, and it's actually a nice thing to have some like that in your left back. It's not like a 1v-Sako who's just solid at the back and up front. You're not really too sure.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Arteta goes up against Bielsa. It'd be interesting to see if he tries to put something, because if he's telling me there that Tierney and Partey are out, you've got the likes of Jack Harrison who's banging form with Bamford. I see them causing you massive, massive issues at the weekend.
I think Cedric can handle it, to be honest with you.
And Rafinha, guys.
Rafinha's been hot.
So, like, for me, I would say if I'm sitting there, Bielsa, definitely, I'd tell Rafinha, if he's in front of Xhaka, take him on. If he's in front of, because you're probably going to get a foul, probably can get the guy card. Is he in front of, look, Holding has been holding his own as well, so I wouldn't say. But yeah, definitely Xhaka, take the guy 1v1.
Excuse the pun.
Holding, he's there.
Yeah, so.
This becomes a team management goal launch for. This is a real sort of quality
commentator. Holding his own.
Specialism.
And you got Bramford, who's also, I mean, he's scoring. I mean, I think he's got 12. I'm not too sure where he's. I think it's number 6 or 7 in the top goal scorers. I may be wrong with that. But yeah, he's scoring goals and a large number of them by himself. And us Arsenal at the moment are conceding and losing, which is not good for us. And again, Leeds on a good run as well. Arsenal, we're trying to stop a losing streak again. So yeah, we literally, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's wrong to say that we are probably underdogs in this one. But definitely for me, I don't know about those guys.
You know what the problem is now is that Arsenal is giving every other club that they're finding their voices. We've got Darren here. He's a Leeds fan. Massive. Wait, Wonga, we're going to give it to you. This is sort of what we're Arsenal at right now. Guys have hope. Almost. We're Liverpool at the moment as well. Yeah, sorry.
I'm saying, but he's being cautious because he says Calvin Phillips might be out, which would be tough for them. Because when they lost Calvin Phillips early in the season, they weren't the same team. You know what I mean? Because he was sitting in front of the back four, spraying the passes. I can't remember who they tried to put in front. And they tried to put Matthijs Klich as a six. But yeah, I think if Calvin Phillips is out, then it equals out in terms of Partey being out.
And I think if you look at Austin as well, like the one thing I do have faith in is us going forward. If we start, if we start Martinelli, we start Saka, we start Aubameyang or Lacazette, Smith Rowe, I think we'll get our goals. We have to try and, I mean, Leeds can get goals. They've shown that. They've got more than Arsenal. I think it's 11 more goals than Arsenal. So we can definitely, possibly, we can concede against them as well. But we need the win. And I feel like we'll probably, if they're thinking about it, we'll probably need or want it more than they want it, you know.
I think Leeds will be looking at this game thinking this is the one they'll want. They'll be going for this, you know, the for them, it'll be symbolic of kind of stamping their authority on that mid-table kind of rivalry, putting Arsenal away. And I think they'll see, and also Arsenal, and you know, losing Tierney is, I think, a big blow. The Arsenal do lack a certain level of intensity. We saw it at the beginning of the season when they went through that bad patch. They were lacking players who were like taking games by the scruff of the neck and being the leader on the field. And Tierney is one of those players where, I know he's younger than that, but he really goes on the field, really drags players along with him, and he does run at defenders, and he does have that kind of, I'm going to win this even if it kills me kind of mentality. And I think they'll suffer without that, especially if Leeds do get on the front foot and start creating chances. Arsenal have shown that they're kind of easy to rock at the moment. And I think that could, if Leeds do have a few early chances, I think Arsenal will end up stepping back and giving them too much space. And I think that could prove to be a problem. So I think for Arsenal, the key thing will be getting an early goal in order to kind of make sure that they can be in control of the game. And if they don't get that, I think Leeds will grow into it, and I think it'll eventually end up being a Leeds win.
I think the game will be definitely open. Whether Leeds score first or we score first, I just think goals will be flying everywhere. I'm just hoping that Arsenal is on top of that. I promise you, Arsenal will score. We've got the talent. I've got the guys to score the goals. The question is, who will score more?
Yeah.
Mosa, are you back with us here? Are you?
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry, man.
All right, good. Because the next thing we're going to talk about was Chelsea Newcastle. It's almost like you get scared every time we're going to mention Chelsea, so you duck. So Chelsea.
Easy, Tiger. Easy.
We've got, obviously, Newcastle had their heroic win over the weekend. Obviously, Chelsea pushing for top four. Kevin believes that can happen. Do you believe, I mean, the routine, we don't really have to go deep into this game because on paper, we should all be saying Chelsea should get...
Wow, guys. Yeah? We can't do this to Nick's team, guys, please.
Nick's in the bush. I don't even know what we're talking about.
On paper, it is fair, man. Like, out of the past 12 points, I think we've collected 10. So, Tuchel's been doing very, very well for the team. The momentum is up. We guys are confident. There are a few injuries, but I think we have enough in our locker room to actually take on Newcastle and get our results on the day.
My question is, because we don't really have to dive deep from that perspective, my question is for you, realistically, based on how sort of unpredictable the league is at the moment, top four finish, you think it's possible under with Tuchel's assistance here?
It is possible. We're not too far in the running, but it is going to be very challenging as well, given that we are in the FA Cup still and are in Champions League still. And that poses a lot of risks for this team at the moment because we do... I'm also out. So, like, Tuchel is trying to figure out the squad, and he has a couple of injuries to contend with at this point in time. The most crucial for me at this point in time would be Thiago Silva. I think having him injured and out for some time does leave a little bit of leeway at the back. Rudiger is good, but as we saw over the past weekend or during the week, he is prone to mistakes, and I'm not too confident having him there at that centre-back position over the likes of Thiago Silva. So, yeah, man, it is interesting times, but I do think we can compete for top four. We're not too far from the top, you know. We're like six points behind United, and that's a United that's done really well this season, so I think we're still in the running.
No, yep. You must focus on the other red team first before you look at United. So look at the other red team, which you're closer to, and then you can. Then you can look at the best red team in England.
But you were
the only focus would be on like the other Manchester team at this point in time. Liverpool are struggling as well with injuries. They are struggling as well with getting form.
Yeah.
So there is that difficulty that they're experiencing on their own. So I think Man City are the team to beat and the team to look up to for any of the top four contenders at this point in time.
Yeah. Chris, your take on this before we move on to the next game in terms of Tuchel and the impact that he's having.
Can you add on what you think of Lampard's tenure?
I think it's interesting with Tuchel coming in. Obviously, you're speaking about your centre half. Obviously, he's identified that by playing three at the back, pretty much you're playing a back five.
I don't see you getting top four, not because I don't think you'll be up there to try and compete for it. I just don't see you breaking into that bracket with the teams that are above you at the moment. I think you will be fifth or sixth. I think you will have an impact now, but I don't think he knows his best team. And unfortunately, he's not going to have the time to try and play around with it. I think he's like bringing like the likes of Alonso back in and trying different players in different positions. And Pulisic now won't benefit from that playing that five at the back because he'd be so effective. But he likes to play him off the right and the left. I'd like to see Tammy Abraham play more and kind of trust him. Timo Werner's cost the money, but again, like we were saying before, he's one player. We were asking that for Bale for a run of games. Timo Werner's had the games. He's not doing it. He needs to be dropped out. That you've got to be ruthless. We're not talking about development of a player here. We're talking about you looking to try and compete to get into positions to either get back into your Champions League spots and kind of rebuild the club. But I'll just finish on the Lampard stuff. I was heartbroken for him because he'd done I think it's been touched on by so many different pundits. It was kind of the wrong time for him. He couldn't turn it down, could he? He had to go. Had to go and do it. I don't know why sacking him now was the right thing. Me personally, I would have liked to see him. It's not like he was free falling. I'd like to have seen him see out at the end of the season. And then if Tuchel was the man that you wanted to bring through, at least do it with some dignity and say, listen, Frank, we've given you an opportunity. We don't think that you've done it to the best of your ability, or you've done to the best of your ability, but it's not good enough for Chelsea. And then see him out the door. I don't get why just throwing him under the bus and getting rid of him.
Chris, we got Darren here saying Frank Lampard is the most overrated manager in English football. Drink at Derby, getting up the Chelsea job, piss poor. There you go. This is what you get from a Leeds.
From Leeds, we haven't seen the Premier League for 17 years.
They found their voice.
That's Leeds and Derby. That's Leeds and Derby. I don't think. Listen, I think he was getting away with a lot of stuff, wasn't he, Frank? I think Ollie was taking a lot of the brunt of the stuff early doors. I just think for the way that Chelsea were, he had no money last year. Then all of a sudden, he's not bought those players. He's just had like £250 million just thrown on him, and now he's got to fit them all into a team. That's not fair for a coach. He's a coach rather than a manager, isn't he, Frank? So for someone who's just gone right then, get those players playing into a team. That's massive. I'm trying to read these things as they're coming in at the bottom here as well.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Welcome back.
I wanted to ask Derek, given the Derby Leeds link, is he watching this on a laptop or is he watching this on a drone?
peeping over the fence.
He's right. He's just having a go because of Spygate.
Did he say that?
But I agree with Akil over there, man. We would have ended up being a mid-table team. I think what we lacked with Lampard was a lot of a structure or structured approach in terms of the philosophy that we're going to express in the game. And if we had continued with him, we would have lost points, not knowing exactly how we lost those points.
But does Tuchel guarantee that? That's my argument. I don't think Frank was the right man for the job. I 100% don't think he was to be there past the season. But I don't think Tuchel's going to have an impact where he goes, right, he thrusts you into the top four bracket straight away. He's not guaranteed to give you that, is he?
No. Yeah, I agree 100%. I wouldn't have actually went for Tuchel up front as well, but it is a better structured approach. You can understand like what type of energy you'd bring to the team, what type of philosophy there'd be there in the team, whereas Frank still felt as if he has to build that philosophy in his own managerial style and approach, which I felt like we didn't know why we're losing. We'd lose games and then speak to Frank and he says, the boys have to sharpen up, they have to improve their individual performances, they have to, look at certain elements, but we never knew exactly what was going on in the locker room and the change room. Yeah. And that was the toughest thing with Frank, for me personally speaking.
Look, also, in terms of my little two cents, I think they just needed the sort of manager balance at this moment in time because they couldn't stick with the Frank Lampard based on the comments that Kiel finished in the table. They just couldn't allow that with the money that they spent. And I think long term, regardless of whether this works out for them, if this doesn't work out for them, they're going to replace him and they're going to go after Red Bull Leipzig's manager, Julian Nagelsmann, in my opinion. That's who their goal is. I told you before, that's how the players that they've signed, that's the sort of philosophy they're trying to follow. And I think that's who they would go for. And I think long-term, because they've only given him, I think, an 18-month contract, Tuchel anyway. So if he does well, it's a bonus for them. If he doesn't, they're just going to do what Chelsea does and just move on and get the next guy. So
yeah. That's 18 months is long enough, you know?
Poch also has 18 months, eh?
At PSG.
Yep.
That's the way it'll go forward now. That's the model that'll take place in clubs, especially after COVID. Yeah. They can't be giving them 4 or 5 year deals. I think you should have an 18-month contract and then reassess it after 12. So
Solskjaer is going to get a two year contract only.
Yeah,
guys,
Give him 5 years, gents. Please.
the whole thing is this. Football's changed. We get that. We get results. Results has always been the main thing. But look at Ferguson. We all know it's historic. His story. He struggled first 3 seasons. Even look at Liverpool. Klopp came in. He made a difference. But he wasn't getting results that he wanted, particularly after 8 months. So how realistically, maybe for a club like Chelsea and a Man City and a PSG, where they throw money at all the problems. And I'm convinced Pochettino only got 18 months because they just worried he might get bored. You know, that's actually the thing. Like, let him win the trophy and then move on. But that's pretty much what I'm thinking. I think the next one, guys, is the list. Less, and this is also why I'm getting vocal. The Leicester
Liverpool game.
What now?
The biggest game.
Oh, okay. The biggest game. Yeah, maybe a big for us. I mean, look,
number three number three versus number four is big. Who else is playing in the top four against each other?
I love the fact that you as well, just like Elise.
There's that other Manchester team playing.
Yeah, I like that. My point is, with this Liverpool sort of scenario, it's funny that all of a sudden there were a lot of Liverpool fans jumping on the bandwagon, giving shit to Liverpool and the fans and the coach and everything else. Now Jurgen Klopp, they find out Jurgen Klopp's mother's passed away, and everyone's going, oh, shame, he's had to deal with this too. After it was the same guys giving this guy shit. So when we're talking about every week you hear me coming in, there's a variable. I'm like, there are so many variables to sort of discuss why the form and the season has gone the way it has gone. Let's pick one of these scenarios. And for me, it's a difficult sort of...
No, are we listening to this guy? But I'm going to just allow you...
when they were being
critical to Klopp, they were being critical to Klopp in that he was making too many excuses. They were not being critical to Klopp and saying that Klopp is a bad person. You know what I mean? They're not saying Klopp is a bad person. We're talking about Klopp's footballing management and team, and saying that making excuses for his team. We're not going in on Klopp. It's different with specific players in the Premier League, where people are going in on players and saying, hey, man, monkey this, whatever, whatever. No one is making discriminatory things against Klopp. They're just saying that Klopp, his team's not playing well. It's being critical of a manager. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went through this. So we didn't say that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's whoever passed away. It's now a human element to say,
because I wasn't actually talking about rival fans. I was talking about own personal Liverpool fans getting critical and now all of a sudden changing their tune. That's the first thing I'll say. The second thing I'll say is that when we're looking at Klopp now, this whole scenario with not even being able to attend his mother's funeral. Now, you're asking someone in this time to conduct the job that he's done. He's just come off this high horse. The expectation is higher than ever. And now you've got most of your players injured. You don't have the fans. You've got the stuff that you're dealing with on yours. Like, how much, from a human capacity perspective, does this play a role? This is my question for the sort of Leicester-Liverpool game. Yeah, it's a big game in the context for the race for the top four and everything else and the money that comes along with it. But, I mean, surely, how do you judge this game? This is one of the scenarios
I
want to touch on something. This is probably my last comment on Liverpool. Ne? I am not going to take away from the fact that he can't bury his mother, right? And it's very sad that he can't bury his mother, right? I'm just going to say that everyone else as well, they do lose family members, right? And obviously, yes, I think Klopp is tougher because he is the person who's overlooking. Whereas if it's a player who loses a parent, a player can be taken away from the team and has time away and so forth. So that does affect Klopp, and there's so much that has to go on with Klopp. And you know, our heart goes to Klopp. You know, condolences to the Klopp family and for him to lose his mom. You know, and he can't even go to the funeral. You know what I mean? But then also, there are players who do lose their parents as well. That maybe can't go to the funeral as well. You know what I mean? I think maybe then we don't know about it. You know, for instance, you know, I know of a player in South Africa who lost his father, who plays for Kaizer Chiefs. You know what I mean? He lost his father. You know what I mean? But I think obviously a player can be taken away from the situation and not play that next game.
Yeah,
but coach
I think like condolences to the Klopp family and, you know, the family as a whole. And I feel like the fact that, you know, Klopp can't go home and to be with his family, to lay his mother to rest, it should spur on the players to take some responsibility and also then say, look, we understand our manager's going through the most. We are here to show our manager that what he's doing here is actually meaningful. The players should come to the party. We can't, if they perform substandardly on the day, they can't say no. That because my manager was had lost a parent that I couldn't play too well, they should come to the party and actually represent and show that the manager is actually working for something which is bigger than their family. Condolences at this point in time for the club, you know, that they show that the club is there to support the manager as well when the manager is going through tough times. Yeah, players have to have a sense of responsibility to the manager.
Do you guys think the players were privy to all of this? Out of curiosity, I don't know, Chris, you haven't weighed in on this. I'm just curious. Technically speaking, if you're really that close to the players, but there's also a degree of professionalism that you don't want them to be bothered by this, considering everything else that the footballers have to think about while they're trying to perform.
I think obviously it's a difficult thing to discuss anyway, but I think you summed it up by saying it just needs to be professional. Unfortunately, as heartbreaking it is, they just need to kind of block it out because he can't deal with it. He's not going to be allowed to deal with it, which is ridiculous that he can't spend time with his family now. I can't get past that. But in terms of the players, I wouldn't say it'd be filtered down to the players. I don't understand why maybe Liverpool didn't give him a leave of absence and say, listen, give yourself a week off, because his head must be just mashed up. And this isn't a thing that's been happening over a couple of days. This must have been coming for what, weeks?
Yeah, it's been a while, yeah.
And I don't think you can say... Oh, was it in January?
19th of Jan. So not too long
ago. After Burnley, or day of Burnley. I think the day of Burnley's game or something. I think they said that the Burnley game is when he should passed away.
Yeah. And then you've got to go out to press. And I understand he's lost his head a few times in the press recently, but you've got to go out there. He's obviously on edge and he's got to deal with everything. He's trying to be professional. But in terms, I think you summed up by saying... The team does need to take over in terms of that. You are Liverpool Football Club. You need to try and take the burden of your manager and play out the performances. I think the biggest thing, I've seen some down in the comments there, if they had fans, imagine the atmosphere that would be generated for Klopp at the weekend if they had fans.
You'll never walk alone type of spirit.
Yeah, so it would have been amazing. It would have been amazing.
It would have been absolutely amazing, wouldn't it? But I don't see what Liverpool are going to do now this season. I think... In terms of, I know the injuries have been, it's been said about, obviously, Van Dijk and the centre-half, but they're not creating anything. Thiago goes, I loved Thiago. I just think in terms of, he hasn't got the player around him to allow him to do what he needs to do. He's becoming the player who's breaking it up when he needs to be that little bit higher. If he had Henderson, or even if he had Fabinho next to him, I just think Thiago will come into his own words. I think he's too deep. He's too crab-like at the moment. He looks great on the ball, but he's not really affecting anything. I just think he needs someone alongside him to try and kick him on a little bit. Not playing Shaqiri with him and he expecting to go in and change the world.
Yeah, Shaqiri and Origi.
Yeah.
There's a huge expectation from Thiago now because of the reputation he's had. Now he's trying to overcompensate and things, but he's doing a role that he's never done before. And, you know, maybe if Henderson again, to my point, Cedil, I said week in, week out, Henderson must start in the midfield.
No, I agree. I agreed with you for the City game. I agreed with you completely for the City game that Henderson should be pushed in the midfield. Fabinho and Nate Phillips centre back, then it would have been a better game for you guys. You probably still would have lost, but not 4-1.
In the game.
Fair enough.
Man City Spurs, before we give our predictions for all these games, Man City.
One way train.
Yeah, they're breaking records left, right, and centre. I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah,
Mourinho,
it's a
Pep sort of Mourinho. Mourinho, I think Pep actually broke Mourinho. This is actually what I think, you know, going back to
Mourinho. When we played them earlier this season, it was a masterclass, you know. We were tight at the back, we hit them on the counter, we won 2-0. It was perfect, it was beautiful, great. Kind of, that was peak Mourinho Spurs. But I think
peak.
We are now at the other end of that spectrum. We are now at the other end, and I'm worried for this game. I think we're really going to struggle. I think City are in phenomenal form. It's all just coming together. They're really ticking nicely. I can imagine I'm just going to get so many love letters from Ronnie over this, and
he sent it to the Facebook group. But keep going. I read it to you.
No, you see, it's emotionally exhausting being the object of his affections, and I think that's gonna be what's gonna happen this weekend. I think we are gonna really struggle. I think Spurs we're not tight at the back at the moment. We showed it again last night. We're not keeping it. I think we'll create a few chances. I think if we can go out there, we'll. I don't know if we'll score, but I think we'll be active in the final third a little bit, which will be great. But I do think we're probably going to struggle to get anything out of this game, which is really annoying.
Wonga, what do you think about this sort of the prospect of winning a battle?
One way, Jane. It's going to be opposite of what happened in the last game. Just to cut things short. I don't see Spurs winning.
Yeah.
I don't see Spurs winning this game. But look, I mean, they do have Harry Kane and Son. If Harry Kane is still fit for this weekend, possibly a goal. One. I'll give you guys one. But yeah, strong. I don't see that.
Yeah, we are going to.
What are you doing, Claudio?
I'm showing you guys the messages that get sent from Ronnie, specifically delivered to Matt. Here's one of Bruno Fernandes. Then there's another one here. Spurs will be in a mid-European competition next year, even if I have to write the song myself. There we go. even to please pass it on to Matt. And then he says another one. Gareth Bale getting paid a fortune for nothing.
classic Grady.
I would watch Spurs go to Eurovision with Mourinho kind of conducting that. I think it could be a bit of a lot. I reckon... You know, Son probably plays an instrument. He seems the type. And
the violin.
Yeah, you know.
I want to say, you know, the interesting with that Spurs and City game is that, guys, you know, football is a funny thing, guys. You know, Jose Mourinho always feels that when he has something to prove, guys, he will prove it to you. You know what I mean? That's Jose Mourinho for you. So let's not count Jose completely out and Spurs completely out, especially because their most influential player is available. I just worry about Lloris. The goals that I saw yesterday, Claudio, I thought of you yesterday. I was thinking about you when I saw those goals. I saw those goals and I was like, damn, man. I know Claudio and I have been critical of Lloris, but he's actually worse than what we said.
Yeah. He's riding on that French reputation.
He
on the
is,
World Cup. All of it. He's cost them so many. If they are serious, Spurs, if they are serious, they will spend what they can.
Nick Pope or something. Yeah.
But if they can, imagine them breaking the bank for Oblak. That changes them like an Alisson did when Liverpool came in my opinion. But anyway, that's not one. It's like, I don't know what's going on there. Okay. Betting corner, guys. This is where we're going to give our predictions, our results. Don't be afraid to. Let us know what you think as well. We're going to start with Matt. We're going to go Chris. Then it's going to be me. Then we're going to go Musa, Wonga, and we're going to end off with Selo. And the first game is none other than the Arsenal-Leeds game. Only because, again, I think, I don't know, Wonga needs to give us his real thoughts as to how this is going to play.
Yeah, I've learned better than to back Arsenal. I've discussed it many times. I backed them once, and they punish me. I reckon it's going to be a tight game. I think it's going to be a draw, actually. I think it's going to be like a 3-3 kind of messy, loads of mistakes at the back. No one's going to be happy with it. I reckon 3-3.
3-3?
Yeah. Short and sweet for me, I'm going 3-1
Leeds. 3-1 Leeds? Oh, yeah. Hey. I think Arsenal playing at home, they do a win. And Leeds are exposed the back. And we do know on his day, Arteta can't get them organized. It just depends whether or not they can score. So I'm going to say 4-1 Leeds. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to say 2-1 to Arsenal.
I'm going to say 2-1 to Leeds.
Yo. That's three out of four the ones.
I definitely say, I say 3-2 to Leeds. Leeds will come guns blazing, that's for sure. The last games, I'd say 3-2 to Arsenal.
He said Leeds.
Are you sure about your team?
I was thinking of myself. Leeds will come.
49 in the back is just for show.
Leeds will come, guys, amazing, but we'll top them. I said 3-2 to Arsenal, yeah.
I think it's going to be a draw. I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw. That's my thinking.
Okay, 2-2 draw, fair enough. Next one, Chelsea versus Newcastle.
Chelsea are going to do it. It's going to be boring and businesslike. 2-0.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-0 Chelsea.
1-0. Yeah, they're going to. I mean, Chelsea are going to have all the possession. Newcastle are going to sit deep, wait for that one chance. You know, if they 0-0 half time, we know they're going to sit even deeper. And park the triple deck bus if they can find one. But yeah, no, it's going to be a 3-0 Chelsea.
They'll go for 2-0 Chelsea.
Sorry, what is that, Musa?
They'll probably get one shot on goal the whole day from Newcastle's side. So I'll probably go 2-0 Chelsea for that game.
I'll go 2-1 to Chelsea.
They're going to score!
I think I also want to give Newcastle a goal because of this new assistant coach. So I'll say 2-1 to Chelsea.
2-1 to Chelsea. There we go. No wins for Nick. No wins for Newcastle. Nick must enjoy the bush and actually not come back from the bush. You should hope the TVs aren't working there. All right. The big one for us, Leicester versus Liverpool.
So I mean the football's one thing. I think the more interesting bit, I'd love to be a fly on the wall when Klopp has to go into Brendan Rodgers' office after the game and they share that customary glass of wine. And I think Rodgers is going to have a framed picture of him at Anfield, probably behind the desk, just to remind him. You know, maybe give him a box set of We Are Liverpool just as a party gift. But football-wise, I think Liverpool are going to turn this around. I think there's been a lot of focus on what's going wrong there, and I think. For all the talk of them having lost their mentality, I think that this is the week we'll see it come back. So I reckon they'll pull this off. I reckon they're going to do I reckon it's going to be a 2-0 win. I think Leicester are a good side, no doubt. They've been playing some solid ball this season, but I reckon Liverpool are going to come out and kind of show us why they were champions. I reckon it's 2-0 Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting one. Brendan always does well going back. I think it's going to be a 2-1 Liverpool, but I think 1-1 up until the death. It's going to be a late winner for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think that's
probably Firmino, no doubt.
Yeah, guys, look, I've been, you know, every week I come on and I give a prediction. I think I always speak with my heart and go, no, but they're champions now, so it should be slightly different. And it hasn't gotten better. So I'm very scared to just go outright say Liverpool win. At this moment in time, I'll take a point away and just keep in that hunt for top four. That's where I'm at. But, you know, my heart is a loud thing. My mind tends to just shut off. So I'm gonna go with a Liverpool win. Yeah, 2-1.
Close. I think you should listen to your mind a little bit more, man. Because I think Leicester are probably thinking about this and looking at Liverpool and how they're coming up together for this game and thinking there's an opportunity for them to get some points from this. So I think they'll come out for a draw 2-2 today over that game.
Cool.
Yeah, I also think 2-2. I think Liverpool, you know, just watching the last game, I think, look, I don't think they were like horrible, like bad, they deserve a 4 driving. I just think there was horrible mistakes that many teams would have pounced on. But I mean, I don't think it was wise to give it to a team like Man City. But I think they do have enough to get a draw out of this one. Both teams, a point, 2-2.
Cool.
Yeah, man, I've been thinking. I was watching Leicester against Brighton yesterday. Their first team has played. Let me just give Liverpool some credit as well. against West Ham and Spurs, which was away from home. I think that's where they've actually performed this season, is away from home. This year. And Leicester haven't been great at the King Power. So 2-1 to Liverpool.
Hey, Salah! Yes, man. For some reason, we're always on the same wavelength when we give our predictions. Just not on players and how good they are. Yes.
We can never agree on that.
No.
I think this is only going one way. West Brom are just collapsing. They're kind of Mm. You know, it is Big Sam's collapse in microcosm. So I reckon United are going to take this. It'll be 2-0 or 3-0.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Hart 3-0 United.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 4-0 United, and this is the one where Sam Allardyce actually goes, I want to keep my reputation as to being the one manager never got relegated and walks out.
Yeah, I reckon he gets fight with a steward over something and just staggers out of the stadium at half time. Like, I'm done with this. Just goes and gets and watch the rest of the game out of
pipe. I see an Ole out type of game coming up here. It's literally like written in it. If they do lose this one, it's another course for Ole out. So West Brom 1-0.
I will say this though. Last time also was the only one to make that call, and he got it right, and it actually sent the wobble that United went on afterwards a little bit. So be very fearful when Mosso gives this sort of prediction. Wonga.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was going to say same as George. 4-0. 4-0 to Man United.
Yeah, Wonga, you should take my heat, dog.
I'd like to see it, because I won't lie, but...
Musa must stop bringing bad vibes to Man United. 3-0 to Man United.
3-0 to Man United, right. And for the tastiest one, arguably, for the weekend, the Mourinho-Pep Guardiola clash, the top of the league team versus the team just trying to fight for top four. Can he break Mourinho? Will this be the end of Mourinho? You know, like... I don't know.
You know, again, the heart reminds me that we played City before and it was clinical, it was masterclass. And if we could, if we play like that again, there's no reason we can't go toe to toe. So I'm going to ignore every game we've played between that first time and now. Same again and win 2-0. I can't. But I mean, realistically, it's going to be a tough game. If we come away with a point, I'll be really happy. But I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, City at home. I see 2-0, if not 3. So I'll go with 2-0 City.
Yeah, no, City are just too good at the moment. They're flying. And I mean, jeez, what they did to Liverpool was hectic. But, you know, it could be the game that suits Mourinho. Ah, shit, man, this is a tough one. But yeah, no, on paper,
it's outed, you know?
Yeah, he does. I mean, this is the sort of game where, you know, he likes the big stuff you sort of thing. So I'm so on the fence of this. I could see it going either way. But Man City are just too good realistically. And if you're going just on paper, they have to be the ones that are winning it. So I'm going to say 3-0. 3-0 Man City. They're going to get one. They're going to break Spurs. Maybe 3-1 for Kane to get a goal. Kane will score.
I think Mourinho's objectives are probably going to frustrate you a lot on the day, Matt. It's going to be one of those games where he tries to dial down everything that Man City's got. And Pep will respect that from Mourinho style, you know. So I do see like a 2-1 type of result where Tottenham do get a goal by Jones through Son Kane, but they'll be parking the bus for sure.
I mean, I'll have to go with same with Darren as Darren predicted the 3-1 to City. I do think Spurs have enough to get a goal, but it's not to win.
No, I didn't see the comments. I was like, "Who's Darren?"
Me too. Who's Darren? I was also saying, "Who's Darren?" I was like, "Flip." But then I looked to the right.
Darren,
like, okay,
these
cool.
guys don't be upset, Darren. They just got the vibe for Leafs fans. They just apparently don't recognize the problem.
Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting game, man. I think Kane and Son, man, with them on the field at any point in time, there's always a chance of a goal. So I will give Tottenham a goal. It's just a question of. Man, Hugo Lloris, man, does not instill confidence in me. So 2-1 to Man City.
Gundogan first goal.
It's gonna be a tough weekend, guys.
Yeah,
I see. Darren's asking how Percy Tau played last night.
I think it was.
What
well.
Do you guys
I think?
Think?
He played well. I think if I gave it out of a 10, a performance rating, I would say 6.5 out of 10 last night.
I feel like they still have to figure out how to best play him, like what gets him going and how the team should actually give him ball and get to his feet. Because it's tricky sometimes. He's like not linking up with the players best as possible.
True. Chris, but also,
I just want to get this quickly. Chris, what are your overall thoughts of Percy Tau? Have you seen much of him? What do you think of him as a player?
No, I've literally seen glimpses, so I couldn't really give it. Obviously, if he's given time like anything else, I just think he needs time to adapt. I've only seen little glimpses, so I can't have a proper overall about him. I know he's exciting, but is he going to be given the time and chances to get through? I don't know.
That's true.
Tough one.
Mm. Also, the same thing, we're talking about other players.
Yeah.
You play one game, then you don't play, and then you play, and then you don't play.
Yeah. And Brighton can't really afford to take a long time to take chances on players that, you know, they're very close to that relegation scrap. So
they're next to Arsenal, they.
I will tell you this though. The Brighton sort of guys that started their own little channel talking about Brighton. The amount of followers they got just from talking about Percy Tau, just from Africa. Now the guys are getting asked to be in Sky Sports News. It's actually a bit nuts. And considering we're all saying he's probably not going to play. But well played to those guys.
They even have free shipping. Brighton has free shipping to South Africa until
Sunday. Don't say that. Can I tell you something, Selo? My dad, I told you, before Percy Tau...
He's a Brighton fan, yeah.
I once, for Christmas, ordered a Brighton shirt. Okay? These dickheads. Yeah. The shirt got lost. Never had it. Then for like 6 months, I had to argue. My poor dad, it was a Christmas gift. And then it didn't even arrive for his birthday, which was 2 months later. And then eventually it came through. So I'm very happy that they've done this now. And that makes my life a little bit easier. Okay, that much.
They should have lost the Liverpool shirt.
Southampton is beating Wolves 2-0 in the FA Cup, so they're about to qualify to the next round.
Oh, well done. That's one way to bounce back. Right, guys, before we go, it's been a decent show. I mean, Chris was here, so I made it okay. Final thoughts, everybody. Final thoughts before we go.
You know, I was going to say, what's very funny, if you actually looked at Wolves for the guys around me, I would say, yeah, everyone around me, except for me, their thoughts on the team in the beginning of the season and what you're saying about them now. Yo, it's like different sides of the spectrum. Like thinking Chelsea was going to win it. Now, I'm not even top four. Man United are like, are easy about it. But now, I'm pretty sure deep down you think, you know, you want to give it a shot up there. Liverpool, yo, other side. Tottenham, I thought were the ones to take it. Could be the season, but yeah.
You're thinking top six.
You said your team might be fighting to take it.
Yeah, but what he's saying is saying the same thing, which is he just wants to survive.
Like, yeah. Just survive, champ.
Yeah. That's used to be top four as a trophy. Now Arsenal are saying Premiership survival as a trophy. They're the new
version. Remember all those stories about the FA Cup.
I do want to say that we threw Chris in the mix here, and this has officially become our longest episode. I don't know what you did, Chris, but you got these guys talking. I don't know.
No, man, it's good. Yeah. It's good. We had a special guest. We had to you know, stretch it.
Yeah.
And thank you very, very much for taking the time to join us, Chris.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot, Chris.
Great insight. And I'll just end on, obviously, happy birthday, Claudia. Have a good one, mate. But some great insight from you all. I think it's good that you're all pretty level-headed. It's not like you're just fanatics and you're just spouting off stuff. There's actually thought behind it. So I've enjoyed myself. Hopefully you'll have me back.
Yep.
No, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
We're going to have to ask our financial manager and see if it's within the budget.
Of course.
All right, lads, thank you very much, man. Have a good evening. And for those that stuck around, holy shit, we've had dedicated at least. We've gone up to 11 people watching us live. We've got 5 guys still on the line. Thank you very much. We appreciate it, and we can't wait to see you guys on Tuesday. Have a good one, guys. Oh, wait, so one last thing. Darren wants to say something. He says, Leeds last-minute Europe push. Ha ha. No, kidding. We'll be happy with winning. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Arsenal, Darren.